to Season 5 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
This season is proudly sponsored by Allplay. If you've been following my social media, aka Token Gay Mer, you'll see that my Allplay gaming table gets used on the daily when I'm not flying to different conventions. Between hosting meals on it as a dining room table or removing the panels and adding the cup holders for a Friday night game night as a board gaming table, it gets used constantly. It's also perfect for being a working station for me building my ridiculous amount of prototypes. It honestly gets used more than I ever would have expected. Not to mention, it's great for hiding games and their pieces from my cats. Sans is my little box sitter, while Nova tries to steal the dice as Banshee watches from high atop the cat tower. I've caught them attempting to take dice from Allplay's Sequoia and Mountain Goats, two of my favorite Allplay games that my non-gamer friends adore. We play a lot of party games, and these two, they don't mind me taking out instead. So check out Allplay's tables, bags, playmats, and board games at allplay.com. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, Episode 102, The Cascade System. Today, we are joined by Rough Magic's game designer, Mike Danovich. Thanks for being on the show.
Of course.
So this is going to be a really interesting episode, and I'm excited to talk about it. But before we jump into what is the Cascade System, mind telling everybody a little about yourself and how you got into designing games?
Sure. I've been around games pretty much my entire existence. At one point, my claim to fame was both of my parents worked for TSR, coming from Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, growing up. So like I grew up around plenty of the game designers and writers for TSR, amongst other companies. Specifically for Rough Magic, it was Christian and Richard, my partners, were looking for more game masters in the Chicagoland area a couple years ago. Got sent my name, figured, you know, why not? I'll start interviewing with them. I'll see if I can venture out into professional GMing. Did a little bit of that. And then Christian had approached me for a project on the side. Hey, we would love to do a partnership with this company. Would you mind writing an adventure for them? And that adventure eventually turned into a game. And that's where we're at now, is trying to continue writing and putting out that game.
That's so awesome. So what was that game?
That'll be the Cascade System.
Perfect. It's like we tied it in. For everyone who has not played, how do you play using the Cascade System?
It is basically a redux of a couple of different systems that I've played. So the main focus was for Rough Magic's Wheelings and Dealings. We tend to GM D&D 5th edition almost exclusively. I say that with the caveat of every so often we'll touch different systems, but like by far 5th edition is the most popular one. And the project that Christian approached me about was writing an adventure for Revolution Brewery. Write them a one-shot in league with their release of their newest League of Heroes line for last year. So the goal was by August, we'll do an adventure to help, you know, highlight the beers that are coming out in this pack. I wanted to take another step and offer them something that was a little bit easier to adjust to and not just purely have 5th edition rules. Knowing that after running a number of one-shots at both at Revolution and in my own time, it's a lot of things to keep track of for an individual one-shot, right? Just the character sheet alone, you might have 2 to 3 pages worth of abilities there. And if this is your first time taking a look at something like that, or first time delving into TTRPGs, that can be a little stressful, especially for a system that doesn't explain what the spells do on that page. To even have what the spell does takes an entire book. So for somebody trying to show up the night of, it's very intimidating, and often for newcomers or people experiencing TTRPGs for the first time, my go-to is, tell me what you would like to do. Let me worry about the rule set, right? The most important thing for you this evening is to have fun. Let me worry about all the hard, crunchy rules. And this system is very much that. The goal for this was to be able to run an adventure with a single D20, an index card of your character sheet, so, you know, a little like 4x5, we'll call it, and a pencil. And could you tell a story at a bar in the middle of a like bar side table that fits maybe 3 people? Can you sit and have a good time? So I took out a number of dice from the fifth edition kept the D20 as the standard. If you know about TTRPGs, you've probably heard about a D20, right? So it was taking some of my favorite mechanics or parts of systems that I enjoyed. A majority of the skeleton is the fifth edition, with sprinklings of Blades in the Dark and Savage Worlds. Blades in the Dark being able to be a little bit more faster paced, a little bit more narrative focused, and the ability to change your outcome. As somebody who rolls pretty horrifically in D&D and just regular life, I needed a system where you could overcome rolling nat 1 after nat 1 after nat 1. And I really like Blades in the Dark's system of pushing yourself to change your fate. You take either a level of exhaustion or something similar to show the stress of trying to change fate's hands. As for the Savage World system, I took their overall DC check. Basically, the name of the game is you're reaching for a DC of 4, right? You've got all the level sets of dice you've got from D4 up through D20, and your stats reflect that. It's very similar to like Kids on Bikes, where you might have the level up system and your traits might be one of the different dice. But overall, the name of the game in Savage Worlds is you're reaching for a 4. So if you're unskilled in something in that system, it's a D4 minus 2. Luckily, you can ace on those dice. If you roll a 4 on a D4, keep going. Or if you're familiar with like Never Stop Blowing Up and the Kids on Bikes variant, it's your die explodes and you keep rolling. Makes it a little bit easier to hit those 4s. But I loved the nature of the DC is usually set. And so I pulled a version of that in the sliding success scale for the Cascade system. Makes it a little bit easier to run things on the fly if you're trying to, I don't know, pick a lock, right? You run into a locked door. It's crusted over. You're finding a way to get in. There are a number of ways you can approach this. How would you like to approach it? And if it's like, I pull out a set of lock tools, great. That'd be a lock picking check. For D&D, it's go ahead and roll your D20, add your stat modifiers in there. To make it a little bit easier, the stats for Cascade are a little bit more focused on the skill itself. So basically the one-to-one would be like, I'm trying to do like a dexterity check, right? With the sliding success chart for Cascade, you're basically searching for a 9, right? A 9 or higher is as intended. You do the thing. When you get to a little more complicated checks, things that would be more of the equivalent of saving throws to D&D, that's where you'll have your 14s and higher for success. So basically 1 through 8 is a failure. 9 through 14 is as intended, and 14 and higher is a success. And the basis behind that is the intention of the check. My intention is to open that locked door? Cool. As intended means 9 or higher. I get to unlock that door and continue the story moving forward. If it's I'm trying to attack somebody or cast a fireball at them, my intention is to hit them with a fireball, right? Their intention is to not get hit by the fireball. Because I'm the one doing the action, I'm throwing the fireball in their direction, they need to succeed on a 14 or higher, or my intention works, if that makes sense. So it boils down a bunch of the crunch from 5th edition into some fairly standard attributes. Your trade-off is your strength becomes a visceral trait. Your social is your charisma. Your organic score is basically your constitution. Your arcane is any spellcasting trait. And then your portent ability, very much like a perception check or a dexterity saving throw for an equivalent to 5th edition. Those are the big 5 attributes for Cascade. Your visceral, your social, your organic, your arcane, and your portent. Since you're doing this on a D20, like I was trying to find a way to remove any of those modifiers that get a little bit too crunchy, right? Even when you're talking about 5th edition, you've got roll a d20 plus whatever your attribute modifier is, let's call it dexterity, plus 5, plus your proficiency, depending on what level you're at. You're doing sets of multiplication or addition and or multiplication here. And I'm trying to keep it easy going for a bar side chat, right? So your modifiers tend to be in the plus 1s, maybe pushing plus 2s. It's really dependent on the dice and the story that you want to tell. It also creates an emphasis on both the narrative storytelling and asking for roles when they matter, right? Which is an entire discussion on itself for the TTRPG community of, do I ask for a check here? if it's not going to change the nature of the check, why bother doing it? But beside the point, we've got the redux on those attributes to make it a little bit less crunchy, as well as you've got some of the same mechanics moving forward. For those that liked playing with boards or maps, there's still a sense for that moving system, that movement matters, distance matters. Otherwise, the character sheets boil down to two other traits. You have your static ability and your ultimate ability. Basically, things that you can do pretty well most, if not all of the time. And then one really cool thing you can do once per day. This should be able to end a combat. This should be able to end an encounter. This should be able to say, that was really cool. Let's stop the narration there and move on to the next beat. So really, the character sheets for Cascade at the moment are your five different traits, your static, your ultimate, and that's about it. Everything else is the storytelling.
Okay, so it fits on an index card, kind of had how you mentioned.
It makes it real easy to take a look at it. Here are the things that I can do. And when we ran it for both Revolution, and I've been modifying it for both an in-person five-course dinner event that we did a month after, and a new project that we're working on to expand the Cascade system for this next year, is taking the setting of our God Vein event. And when we did this in person for this five-course meal with TTRPG aspects around it, a little bit of LARPing to go with this, like it's an entire adventure in an evening. Everybody was given their index card character sheet for the evening, taking a look at it like once they get to the table. On the backside is, here's all the things you need to know, right? Here's your actions that you can do per turn. Here's where your exhaustion levels are. Anything that would be like basic game information is on the back. The important information for your character sheet's on the front. That should be everything you need for this evening other than a D20. Can I get you anything else? And it really went over pretty well for the God Vein event. And I'm looking forward to expanding that in the future.
That's so interesting. It reminds me of those murder mystery parties where everyone dresses up to whatever the theme is, except you've done it with the D20 and probably less information on a sheet, because some of those I'm just like, I don't even remember who am I related to in this scenario.
Exactly. There's so much background information and exposition you need to provide for something like that. And it can be overwhelming when you're trying to interact with people face-to-face and stare down at this card at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to make it a little bit easier with a single D20. Cool. How are we going to approach this encounter, this obstacle, this tree in the road, for example? I'm going to throw a bunch of situations at you. You tell me how you want to come at this rather than me dictate how the story is progressing. And that could be a combination of my own GM style, my own writing styles these days. It's just let the party tell the story. That's the important thing, right? We're all here to share the story. It is much less about me pushing my story and my narrative forward, but us discovering what we're all going to do and how we're going to get through this moving in a single night.
And so the initial approach was because of Revolution Brewery's League of Heroes. Did the game tie into those kind of hobby heroes? Tell me more about that.
It did. I took the six different characters that, at least four different characters that were going to be in that League of Heroes box. For Revolution's one shot, I was given art for six different characters. You had your Apollo hero, you had your Cascade hero, you have your Infinity hero, who's one of their heroes they've been pushing along a little bit more frequently. Your Apollo, your Kashmir, your Infinity, your Medusa hero, and they were debuting their Hydra hero for the newest line. It was the first time they were trying to put three different types of hops into a single beer. So they figured a Hydra was perfect. Three different heads. This is going to be fantastic. We'll line it up with the rest of the League of Heroes. And I feel like it went well over well. And since I was making this system at the same time as the Revolution and the God Vein event, I was really taking both facets of those and meshing them together. I have like six different characters to choose from. I have five different traits to pick. This is perfect. How would I class each one of them?
How did you do it?
Well, discussing the characters of the League of Heroes, you've got your Apollo hero, who is aligned with the sun, is an archer. I ended up making them an arcane style fighter. So ranged attacks, gave them a solar shot. You know, once per day, they fire a solar charged arrow, forcing enemies within a 100-foot line to succeed on a visceral check, or they take radiant damage and are blinded until the end of their next turn. Something big, something nasty, something that really drastically affects this encounter, right? For Cashmere Hero, the description was the different fruits and flavor profiles that these beers had. So I tended to give them abilities that are given in their descriptions too. Cashmere Hero has forbidden fruit. Whenever they succeed on an organic check, they can heal themselves or an ally within a certain amount of feet. Their uncharted power calls forth the very earth, summoning pillars of stone to rise underneath creatures of your choice within a 20-foot radius. They have to succeed on a portent check or take bludgeoning damage and are restrained until the end of their next turn. Something big and nasty, just calling the very earth from underneath somebody. Hydra Hero, because it's three heads, I took a mechanic that is so seldom played in D&D these days, the notion of super advantage. Traditional rolls, roll 1d20. You have advantage, roll 2d20s, take the better of them. Super advantage, take the better of three separate rolls. So I figured, why not make this a perfect opportunity to introduce super advantage, roll three times, take the best of them, when you've got three heads fighting for whatever this prize is anyway. Something like Infinity Hero was definitely a spellcaster being able to change its own fate and weave the very fabric of dimensions is a perfect place for me to try out the changing your narrative perspective. It gives you a once per day change a failure into a success. Simple as that. And it can be used in so many different ways and not just one specific way all the time.
That seems like such a cool integration of these. It like almost feels like comic book heroes, even though it's based off of beer.
It really is. And they had a comic book for a little bit of time there. Like a couple years ago, they had a comic book come out following the League of Heroes and Anti-Hero. But in talking with them to start this project, it was I wanted to focus on these six characters that they gave me, find a system that works for what I want to do and also fits into the flavor of these characters, really hit the flavor of these characters. When it came to our God Vane event, the setting now became folks are charged with magics of an ancient nature. It's very Avatar the Last Airbender-ish, right? You are a different kind of bender. In God Vane, you might have access to a specific colored vein of magic that runs in your family, your region, whatever it might be, that follow one of these traits. So your visceral trait would be your red vein. Your social would be your yellow vein. Organic would be your green vein, arcane would be your blue vein, and portent would be your purple vein. And they all very much align with the things that they do. So in that one-to-one exchange between the Revolution set and Cascade system and God Vane as the setting, Infinity Hero is a portent spellcaster. It's all about having that portent check. Their static ability is, unless it's an epic failure, they can never fail portent checks. So it's very hard for them for Infinity Hero to fail that check. That's straight up a purple vein of ability in God Vane because they're so portent focused. We're talking about like a region of oracles and divination wizards who can see their own futures and might be powerless to stop them or might be actively attempting to prevent their own fate. You have your green veins who are so in touch with nature and organic compounds that Cashmere Hero just fit perfectly for trying to heal your friends or being a natural-based spellcaster.
So what made Revolution Brewery like reach out wanting to do an RPG? I feel like that, I don't know, I mean, I've already had another podcast episode where Bud Light actually reached out to like a board game designer group. And they made something. So it's like interesting when you have those kind of mashups where you wouldn't normally think beer wants RPG. Like, how'd that happen?
We had been in a partnership with them for running one-shots for a couple of years already. That's at least where I did a majority of my GMing when I first joined Rough Magic. So we have a standing partnership with them. It's one Wednesday each month. I think the next one's actually tomorrow, the 25th. But it tends to be like last Wednesday of every month. Come in, come play a couple one-shots with Rough Magic, and they make a night of it. And the partnership had been going well, and they wanted to explore other avenues for increasing the marketing and, I guess, recognition of both Revolution and Rough Magic. And this was a perfect way for both of us to succeed and put something else out there that neither of us had done before.
And so which one of you ended up doing like the distribution and how did you give this to people?
I took it to a printer mid-March. I got the whole adventure done, PDF done, sent over to Revolution by when they asked in August of last year. intending for it to be a, here, please, like, distribute this out amongst people that are interested. My goal was to put it as a PDF on our website so that folks could find it and download it. I haven't quite gotten there yet, but when we talked again about C2E2, Revolution's a huge, huge sponsor of C2E2. And Rough Magic had just agreed to run TTRPG events at C2E2. It was a perfect time for us to introduce this partnership and say, hey, this is what we've been working on for the past year. So I printed out 400 copies, gave 200 of them to Revolution, and each of us passed out copies throughout C2E2, just anybody that passed by our booths.
That's so cool. A lot of people who listen to my podcast, C2E2 is actually how I found out that the gaming hobby even existed.
Oh, nice.
I have like a special place in my heart because I used to live in the Chicago area. So I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, the tension had always been make it accessible for folks that don't quite have access, which is kind of how the backbone of Rough Magic is we have the DMs, we have the one-shots, we bring it to the players or people that don't quite have the access, people that are always DMing, people that have never had a play group, people that never knew that gaming was a thing. This was yet another perfect place to show that it's more about the players than the company. Give out this product. Hey, here's a one-shot we've written. Here's a new system we've written. Here, this is yours. Do I have to pay for it? No. Here, it's yours. You go tell. Right? You go have fun. You go enjoy your games. You make what you want out of this. And it does nothing but help the community.
I think that's really great because RPGs, to me, have always, in my mind, been a time commitment. I have to have a large group. And also just the math associated with those dice rolls and adding each of the like plus whatever number for whoever I decided to create as my character was intimidating, but like one shots make it more approachable. Having interesting and unique themes or these partnerships or like storylines, like Kids and Brooms was one of the first RPGs that I was like, oh, I really want to try this because it spoke to me more than like the D&D fantasy did or like some space or whatever. So I find it really cool when people are working on these kinds of projects. And especially if like you guys are putting on these one-shots at Revolution Brewery, I mean, you get a taste of that and get to see like, hey, is this something that I want to start investing in? Do I want to find like a local group or someone online to do this? Or do I want one-shots at conventions? Like it just opens your world. And I think that's awesome you guys are doing it.
It's a wonderful feeling to get someone excited about getting into gaming.
I 1000% agree with this. How did you go about playtesting the game?
I did a lot of upfront work in balancing things to start. I'm an overly cautious person by nature. So a lot of my initial stats maintained through because of how cautious I was. Otherwise, I just took it to my home group. They are a set of people that I trust to tell me when something's bad or when something's not working, and also let the system be the system. So I have the folks of mine that I went to. I have a number of min-maxers that I tend to play with. I have a number of people who focus solely on narrative. I have a number of folks who work as hard as they can to bend, if not break, the system. So it's very helpful insight to run a session for them. Cool. Tell me what works. Tell me what doesn't work. What are the grinding points that you can find here? And do a number of sessions of that. Between the Revolution playtests and the Godvane playtests for, you know, quest material and make sure that the system itself works, there was a number of factors and variables that I'm keeping track of during playtesting that allowed me to make it to get it to a point that I felt like I could succeed with this project.
And so how long did the project actually end up taking from that initial starting on it to it being handed out at C2E2?
March of 2023 is when the idea came across my desk. The one shot for Revolution was finished by August, so less than 6 months. The Godvane in-person speakeasy event was in late October, so the 5 different adventures needed to be written for that, as well as the system, in given another 2 months. And then it was passed out at C2E2 this year, which was in April. So just over a year from conception to passing out the booklets.
Wow, yeah, that is a very fast turnaround. And is it something that was given out for free and or based with these events, or is it something that someone could like purchase for themselves if they wanted to check these out?
That is an interesting discussion. Depending on the material, it was available in person with the booklets at C2E2 / if you could find me at a different convention. Like I ended up going to Origins this year and ran both the Revolution one shot as well as another D&D 5th edition one shot for myself that weekend. So I had a number of copies on hand and talked about the game at Origins as well. But then again, if you're not looking for the Cascade system, you were never going to see it. The Godvane itself was a special ticketed event. Since we were pairing with a restaurant here in Chicago, we were putting it up at an unknown location. We were really making a huge weekend of it. Past that, I'm currently working on getting the Godvane setting and Cascade system out the door, hopefully by summer of 2025, into digestible, findable packages so that folks can start using the Cascade system and telling their own stories from here on out.
That's great. So if someone's trying to find you and figure out when that's going to be available, is it going to be on the Rough Magic Games website or is there somewhere else?
It will be on the Rough Magic Games website. Depending on the websites of the companies that we are reaching out to for this endeavor, should be available with them. It's definitely going to be available at convention booths for us once the product comes out. Like I said, so the goal is probably summer 2025. C2E2 next year is really pushing it. I imagine by Fan Expo 2025 is when we'd likely have stuff in hand.
And so for the whole project, what was your favorite and your least favorite moment?
Favorite moment was probably the in-person Godvane event. Watching 5 different tables run 5 different quests that eventually coalesced into one big bad BBEG fight by the end of the night, knowing that they were playing and enjoying my system, that they were able to tell the stories and have their fun and have these big epic moments and really have the game go smoothly and eat a 5-course meal around it. We had mistakes, right? We made sure to laminate these character sheets knowing that food was going to get spilled, and it happened immediately. Absolutely immediately. As for least favorite, oh boy, am I exhausted, right? That turnaround was in less than a year. I was supposed to have help writing the adventure and the system for the Revolution one-shot. That didn't happen. That was just me. For Godvane, we had a writer's room. And I kid you not, we had about half of the writers go silent. It was a lot of writing to do and a lot of work to be done. Not only was I writing the system at the same time, I was also writing adventures and being the head writer of the writer room, so dictating to others what needed to be done. That was a large, large part of 2024 for me. Probably the least favorite, but the reception of that event after October, knowing that Revolution was happy, other players were happy for the Godvane event, I was happy, was a very positive takeaway, as well as seeing the product in person at C2E2 and passing it out was another very high moment for this project. And it's exactly what I wanted, right? Create a game, give it out to the players, let them run with it.
And when you were doing the writer's room, people were kind of apparently disappearing or being uninvolved. Like, how many pages did this end up being, just for reference?
Oh, goodness. The number of pages for something like the Godvane event? So we had 5 different quests. Each of those were probably 10 pages worth of material per GM running it. So for example, I ended up being one of the GMs for the Godvane event as well. I ran the Purple Quest. So it was based on Portent. It was based on an assassination attempt is happening. But 10 pages worth of narration, plus the character sheets you're going to need, plus any encounters here, plus the character sheets for the BBEG fight you're going to have at the end, and phase 2, what happens in phase 1 and phase 2, how we get into the fight, things that you should be aware of, you know, before the quest technically starts. The evening wasn't just start with his adventures. They actually started upstairs in a different location with this big old grand festival that's beginning. They're playing party games and watching a puppet show, and then this big bad evil dragon attacks the festival and they need to head downstairs into where we're going to start our evening, and here are the different quests that you get sent out on, and then start the BBEG fight. So for that event, 10 pages per adventure So at least 50 pages there, not including the introduction and any monologues that we also wrote.
Yeah, you're busy.
Just a little bit.
Well, here, so then if you could offer a piece of advice to a designer trying to build like an RPG based off of maybe a product or an event, what kind of advice would you give to them?
That is a hell of a question. My first bit of advice is you can do it. I promise you can do it. You're going to not like it, but you can do it. Step two is I think you have the resources to do it. And if you don't think you have the resources, you can find them. The final bit of advice I would give is it's easier than you think.
You heard it. If you don't got what you need, go on Amazon. No, I'm just kidding.
No, hold on.
That seems wrong. No. I think that with the correct tools and with the right motivation, a lot of people can accomplish more than they think they can.
100%.
Well, then, unrelated to everything we've already talked about, I'd love to know if you were the designer of a game that you didn't design, which game do you wish it was? One that's already published. So you're just basically like magically genie wish this, and now you are the creator of blah, blah, blah.
I don't think I want to go as big and say D&D. That's a little bit too large for what my aim is.
Okay.
I would have liked to design the game that I was brought up playing. The first TTRPG I experienced was a game called Melee Wizard. It was two different source books. One source book was the melee aspect. The other aspect was the wizard. So they introduced spellcasting after that point. Basically like a, I don't know, 30-page source book on how to do a dungeon crawl and roll up some stats. Super generic, 3d6 for stats. Just random combat encounters. And the original fantasy tropes as you wish. And then wizard involved some spellcasting and elaborated on a little bit. But that's what I had the most fun playing as a kid. My father would DM, my sister and I would play. Every so often, we would take turns trying to DM for one another. It was so based around the story and gave me such a support system for how I play games moving forward. I think that would be my call.
Oh, I love that answer. So much better than a money grab, which seems to be most people's. It's so good. It's adorable. I love that so much. What was the youngest you were at when you tried to DM?
Oh, probably 5, pushing 6.
Oh my God. I can't even imagine a 5 or 6-year-old trying to DM. That sounds so freaking adorable. I hope there's home family videos.
One of my favorite Twitter profiles is for a long time, the one is the 4-year-old DM. It is a father who DMs for his kids, and his youngest decided they wanted to start DMing as well. And as they've been growing up, it started with a 3-year-old, the 4-year-old, the 5-year-old, 6-year-old. I think they're like pushing 6 or 7 these days. And it's constantly just quotes of them having ideas and brainstorming sessions for DMing, or why didn't I think about this? Or this seems like a very cool idea. I've been following them for years. Kids have the best imaginations. They just don't have a sense of the rules.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I do the Young Inventor Challenge, which is based in Chicago. You go to the physical in-person one with like people at play and the Chicago Toy and Game Fair. I do judging for it. And kids are so smart. They have such cool ideas. And they're not held back like adults are. Like, they don't go, oh, that's dumb. Like, we can do sometimes and stop ourselves. And I totally get why a lot of kids get their games signed by publishers after this event. Because they're super creative and also adorable to watch. I love it. It's like a little science fair project, except it's a game.
They get so energized too. Like, this is my idea. This is so creative. And I love this idea. That's fantastic. Absolutely. Let's do it.
Oh my God. Love it so much. Granted, there was this one girl that she just straight up started her pitch and then immediately put down her competition and was like, you do not understand. That is not how I'm going to say yes and want to vote you in. I was like, this kid needs to get a check.
Yeah, I've been trying to get my next door neighbor. He just hit like his first year in high school. In the past 4 years, I've been trying to get him to DM because he has nothing but ideas.
Well, I hope you get it going.
If one of these days, we will.
Well, is there anything else you want to mention about the system or about what Rough Magic Games is doing?
No. Check us out on roughmagicgames.com.
Perfect. Well, then, everyone, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 102, The Cascade System. Mike, if someone's trying to find you specifically, is there anywhere like online, on social media or something you'd want to be reached, or is it just everything is Rough Magic?
You can find me on roughmagicgames.com. My publishing email for that will be publishing@roughmagicgames.com. Otherwise, you can find me on Twitter @MikeDanovich. I do streaming. I do content creation for both Magic and TTRPGs.
Sweet. And then I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds. If you're trying to find me on social media, you can find me under the name Token Gamer, and that's GAYMER, as well as I have a website, DMR Creative Group, and another podcast called Proud to Game, which I should probably start talking about more on this podcast. So check out that other one if you like this one. Thanks so much. I really had a great time having you on, Mike. This was awesome.
It was my pleasure. Absolutely.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcast.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.